So, this is our final shoe in the series on Kibbutz Avot Em, and the theme throughout all of our shiurim between both Halacha and Agadata has been, on the one hand, Kibbutz Avot Em is construed by Chazal as one of the most sublime of all mitzvot that there are in terms of what it means to fulfill it, that one who honors their parents as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one who vexes their parents is akin to vexing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the one hand. On the other hand, the sugyot put front and center the great difficulties involved in the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So much so that last week, after we saw the story of Rabbi Yishmael, whose mother wants to bathe his legs when he returns from the Bet Vad and then drink the water because she's so proud of her son and he refuses, etc. So much so that following those sorts of stories, Rabbi Yochanan reflects on them and says, thank God that I was born an orphan and that I don't have to cope with this extremely difficult mitzvah, which I know, you know, I'd probably struggle to fulfill. So today is both the final one in the series and also completes a cycle of Agadatot in the Gemara, and will hopefully be a nice concluding, bring a lot of the themes together. As we've done throughout, we've combined both Halacha and Agadata. We're going to start with a very important machloket between the Rambam and the Ravid, which, being who they are, is essentially a halachic machloket. And if you were to phrase the question in modern terms, what are our obligations to when parents have really lost it themselves, when the parents aren't in control of their own faculties, what we would probably call today some version of Alzheimer's or very severe senility. And that's what the machloket between the Rambam and the Ravid begins with. Says the Rambam, source number one, Hilchot Mamrim. Mi shenitrafa da'ato shel aviv o shel imo. A person who one of their parents are no longer mentally sound, so much so that great difficulties now enter into their relationships. Mishtadel limhog imahem kafi datam ad shiurcham alehem. A person should try to treat them with and care for them and to the greatest extent that they possibly can, hoping that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have rachamim on their situation. V'im i'efshar, and if it's just no longer possible for this person, la'amod, to stand there, mipneisha nishtattu biyoter, because the demands that they impose upon their children are just so great, v'yelech lo v'itzaveh achirim lahanhigam k'ra'ui lahem, he is allowed, permitted to leave them, to depart, to abandon his parents, and to instruct other people in his place to be able to cope with them. Astonishing psak of the Rambam. This is how the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David, responds, quoting the Rambam right there, Mishnah Tchafat Ator Shel Aviv, Yanicham V'Yelech V'Yitzaveh Echem Anikam Karuri, Amar Avraham, Ein Zu Hora'a Nechona. This is not a correct teaching. Im hu yelech v'aniach loft, for a person to abandon the parents, lemi yitzaveh l'shamro, who could they tell to look after them? So that possibly might be a practical consideration, right? Who, you know, are you actually going to find somebody to take your place? To which you might say, yes, today, one might, you know, there are carers who are, you know, who are very, very skilled at the task, but My feeling is that the Ravid's not really talking about that. The Ravid's not talking about, will you practically find somebody who can clothe them, who can feed them, etc. Rather, what the Ravid is talking about is the unique bond that the child has with their parents, which nobody else can fulfill. And, says the Ravid, in contrast to the Rambam, nobody, can fill that role, and even if the difficulties imposed upon the child are exceedingly great, never does the child have permission to simply abandon their post. Now, the Mefarshim on the Rambam commentators say that actually this isn't a machloket taking place in the abstract that the Rambam has simply asked his opinion. Rather, both the Rambam and the Ravid are reflecting on a Gemara, an Agadata, which we're going to look at today. And both of them are seemingly responding to it and having very different readings of it, which influence their understanding. Interestingly, this machloket doesn't really end with the Rambam and the Ravid. The Torah quotes both opinions. It's not quite clear which one he goes by. The Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Rambam. The Bach, the Bayit Chadash, thinks this sages and justifies the Ravid, etc. So the tension is ongoing. And what we're going to do is really to leave the halachic discussion behind, and we're going to try and really delve deep into the Agadita. And by doing so, we're also going to try and spend some time to try and pick it out in a way in which it can speak to us. So here is the Agadita. I've put the English here because the English is going to play help us a lot in terms of really unpacking it. And it divides into four parts. Okay, so let's read it together. Rav Asi havilei hahi ima zakena. Rav Asi had an elderly mother. Amra le, she said to him, ba'ina tachshitin, I want jewelry. I want nice ornaments. Avidla, he got them for her. Ba'ina gavra, I want a man. I want a husband. Presumably she was widowed. He said, ne'ayan lach, I'll look into it. I'll see what I can do. She says, I haven't finished telling you what I want. Ba'ina gavri, deshapil kavatech, I want a man who is as good as you, who's as wonderful as you. At that point, Shavka. How would anybody translate Shavka? Yeah, very good, right? The translation, which is not mine, he left her, but like Shavak is sort of a stronger, he almost like fled, right? At this point, he can no longer hold it, he can no longer cope with it. Va'aza la'aradi Yisrael. And he leaves Babel, where he is, and goes to Eretz Yisrael, right? There's a reason why he goes to Eretz Yisrael. Anybody get it?
It's where the best people are.
It's where the best people are, that's true, yes. Sorry? Almost. Exactly. Basically, he finds a halachic solution to his problem. Hannah and Mark, do you want to make space for Naomi? He finds a halachic solution to his problem. He's no longer able to cope with his mother's demands. He sees them as just far too crazy and exacting. That final question of hers is clearly indicative of just, you know, craziness, and he's no longer able to live with it. So he finds a halachic solution to his problem of not being able to cope with kibbud av va'em, which is he makes aliyah. Right, you're allowed to make aliyah and, you know, not be with your parents. Obviously, anybody who's made aliyah ever in history without their parents has left their parents. So that's his solution. Unfortunately, it's not such a great solution because he underestimates how persistent she is. Right? Part two. Shama, the ka'azla abatre. He hears that she's coming after him. Right, he gets, you know, he's arrived in Israel, there he'll pick Tel Aviv, Yerushalayim, whichever version of Israel it is you like. There he is, free from his mother's demands of jewellery, of finding a good shidduch for her, right? There's not even WhatsApp or FaceTime to keep her there constantly until the message comes, oh, Rav Asi, your mother is joining you in Israel. Atta lekami de Rabbi Yochanan. Goes to Rabbi Yochanan, greatest sage of the generation. Amarle, he says, Mahu latzet ma'aretz l'chutz la'aretz. Am I allowed to leave Israel? What's the question? What do you mean? One being Malkus,
one being, oh, the other one being, can he help you leave Israel? Yeah. Because of the Rambam, the whole thing about, like, you're not allowed to leave Israel.
Well, isn't that the same question?
Yeah.
No.
In general,
Because
regardless
one
of
is
mother.
Yeah, I mean,
one
it's
is
clearly,
Israel.
clearly
Can
it's
you
mother.
escape
Yeah,
your
but I mean,
or...
he's asking it now at this point.
Well, his mother is coming.
I'm saying, like, as a result, like, is it a good enough reason for him to be able to leave Israel?
What's enough?
Why? Okay, why would he be leaving Israel?
To avoid doing a mitzvah. Or because he
his
realizes how, because of how persistent his mother is, he wants to go back to her.
No, because she's coming to Israel, so he wants to escape from his mom.
Yeah.
Right, that seems to be the option that everybody's saying. That's what Malka meant, right? Is there another?
Well, I was thinking that maybe the only reason he was able to leave his mother is because he was going to Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
So now it's like his mother is now coming to Eretz Yisrael, and he doesn't really have an excuse to run away from his mother.
So that's what he's trying to get.
Yeah.
Okay. So were you saying another option?
I mean, because like everyone's saying the same thing, which is the way I read it initially too, but perhaps he's trying to go back to meet his mother in Chutz-Laaretz.
Yofi. Okay, very, very good. So the question is definitely ambiguous, and it's interesting that the majority of you, in fact, including Pinchas, all interpreted it to mean one thing. The answer comes back very clearly. Amale Asur. No, you can't. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Right, quickly, halachically, what's the one of the two things you are allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for? Almost.
Torah
and Shidduch. Right. Paranda is an interesting one. More cool Agada thought about that.
Sorry.
Mea culpa.
But regards to like keeping one day in Israel, Ravadia uses Parnassa as one of the requirements. Like if you were to get money and a wife and Torah, would you be living in Israel?
So it's a massive derech agav, not that massive. There is a fascinating machloket brought in the Bali HaTosfot. Well known that there are two reasons that the Gemara says for what you can leave Israel: Talmud Torah and to find a partner. Okay, anyone get what the can anyone guess what the machloket is about how to interpret that line? The line of the Gemara is for two mitzvot a person can leave Eretz Israel, for Talmud Torah and to find a partner. Right? What's the machloket about how to interpret that line?
You don't really know, like, if you'll find a shidduch
by leaving or staying. Oh, okay. If you don't know, do you have to have some sort of definite? It's the most wide, enormous machloket.
Maybe Talmud Torah is your way of pronouncing
that. Oh, now you're getting very very personal. No, here's the machloket between the Baalei HaTosfot and I think Rav Haigal. Is it that these two mitzvot are so important that these are the only ones that trump living in Eretz Yisrael and that you're allowed to leave for, which is presumably the simple understanding, yeah? Or is it that if you're able to leave for these two mitzvot, Talmud Torah and to find a partner, Kal v'chomer, how much more so you're able to leave for any other mitzvah?
No.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that outrageous? It's a Kal v'chomer because these are the quote unquote the lowest mitzvot, Talmud Torah,
but
and to find a partner, which you'll all reject.
Yeah, Talmud Torah can get too long.
So I hear you all saying this. I hear you all on the side of the Baalei HaTosfot. So on our final lesson, as sorry.
I really don't resonate or sympathize with the second interpretation.
But it's
not. No, I'm saying I don't think that's a proper
reading.
So, okay, so I'm gonna teach you all a very important. I'm gonna teach you all a very, very important. I'm gonna teach you all a very important methodological point. Okay, every time that you find something, it could be learning a completely halachic sugya, or it could be something that touches on much broader hashkafic issues such as this, and you come across something completely crazy, which makes you say, "No way, that can't be." Exactly this example, you've always got to push past your initial outrage at the point and say to yourself, there must be something really interesting going on here, right? There must be actually some idea lying behind it, and I'm going to burrow down and what that is. Now, this machloket between the Baalei HaTosfot and Haigon, we'll have to save for another time. Happy to talk about it afterwards, but it's a very, very good example of it.
Aim is like interpersonal relationships, and like Torah could represent like
Manyan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Certainly could. And I'll just give you a little, you know, to look forward to for unpacking this smart locket at some later date on our final class as the 2013 cohort of Tzohar ordained rabbis. Tzohar, a very important organization in Israel that I work for, which performs lots of weddings for the Chiloni public, for the secular public. Rav Stab, who is the head of Tzohar, spoke to us and gave us a wonderful shir and built the whole shir based on this machloket about between the Baalei HaTosfot. But that's for another time. Anyway, Rav Asi now clarifies what his question was to Rabbi Yochanan. And unlike all of you, it becomes clear that actually his question was what Pinchas suggested. He says, "Likrat ima mahu, to leave Eretz Yisrael if I'm going in order to meet my mother." It's dangerous to go from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, right? It was dangerous today, certainly, to go from Iraq or Iran to Eretz Yisrael. It was certainly dangerous for an elderly woman 1,800 years ago to make this journey by herself. Am I allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael, for which you're not allowed to leave aside the machloket we just mentioned, for which you're not allowed to leave for anything apart from Talmud Torah, and to find a partner, as far as we know, to go and greet my mother? Amar le, he says, Eini yodea, I don't know. I'm not sure. Itrach purta, he waited a little while, Rav Asi. Hadarata, and then he asked the same question again. You know, maybe he forgot, maybe. Talk it out. Maybe you can give me a clear answer. Amar le, he said, Asi, nitratzta latzet. You want to go? Amar le, this is still Rabbi Yochanan speaking, Hamakom yachzirecha lashalom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring you back in peace. End of part two. Yeah, with her. He's coming to accompany her. What he actually means is, can I leave Eretz Yisrael in order to help bring my mother here?
Okay,
that's the question that he's asking. No, that's the question that he's asking. And Rabbi Yochanan doesn't know the answer. And then Rabbi Asi pushes him on the question again. And Rabbi Yochanan says, you've decided to go? Go. What does that answer mean? Very, very ambiguous.
It kind of seems to me that he could tell that he was kind of asking a question, that he was searching for a specific answer. I feel like we all know sometimes when you're, you know, you ask someone an opinion on something, but you really kind of already.
Nobody's
know
ever asked me a question.
No. So they already really know what they want. They kind of just want to hear affirmation. So it seems like by his, you know, determination task to ask again, Rebecca was like, listen, you've already made up your mind. I can't exactly tell you. But if you really want to go and you think mm-hmm. this is what you want to do, then go. And you should come back in peace.
Mm-hmm. That's one good reading.
That being said, like, it still shows that, like, there wasn't, like, no matter what, the fact that there isn't a clear answer, like, he doesn't have a clear answer to begin with, is, like, interesting, because, like, it just, like, seems interesting that like, there's not, like, a clear answer. But I guess the fact that also, like, it could go either way is, like, it's almost saying, like, it's up to you. Like, that means that him going or not going, neither of them are, like, necessarily right.
Right, so I think here's what I've written out to myself. Did Rabbi Yochanan mean, I see you've made up your mind to go, even though I told you before I was not sure of the halacha, and therefore I withheld my approbation, my agreement, but if you plan to go anyway, rightly or wrongly, you may as well have a safe trip. That's one option. Another option is that what he means is it's a great area, but because you feel strongly, you should definitely go, and may HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless you and other pious children like you. Okay. Now, if we were in the room and if we were able to hear Rabbi Yochanan's voice, maybe we'd be able to have a better idea. But it's not clear. And Rav Asi definitely wasn't clear. And he's left in a complete quandary after having received this answer. So much so that he goes, part three, in front of Rabbi Elazar. Ata lekami leRabbi Elazar. And he says to him, Amale chas v'shalom. I'm really worried. Dilma miltach ratach. Perhaps he's really angry with me, Rabbi Yochanan. Right? Perhaps he didn't like my persistent questioning. Perhaps he thinks that, you know, as sort of Marcus said, you know, I'm just looking for a colour, right? I'm trying to get something that I shouldn't have. So Rabbi Elazar says to him, "My Amarlach, what did he say to you?" Amarle, he said, "Amakom yachzirecha l'shalom, that God should bring you back in peace." Amarle, Rabbi Eliezer said, "Im ita deratach, if he was really angry, lo havi mevarech lach, he never would have given you a blessing. The fact that he blessed you meant that he means you should go, and he's happy for you, even though he's not sure of the answer." Part 4, Adahachi, meanwhile, v'hachi shama la'aroni da'aka'ati. He heard that she was arriving in an aron, i.e. arriving in her coffin, right? She'd arrived in Israel even before he'd left, presumably, but she wasn't arriving alive. Amar, he said, "Iyadi lo nafki. If I'd known, I wouldn't have left." What does that line mean? If I'd known, I wouldn't have left. Two options.
If I'd known this would happen, I wouldn't have left Babel.
Oh, where does the place being referred to leave? If I'd known that she was about to die, I wouldn't have left Babel. Alternatively, very, very good. Right, meaning if I'd known that she was dead.
True,
well, the very next line of the Gemara, which I haven't put on it, is that you're obligated to honor your parents even in death.
Yeah.
But even if that is so, nevertheless, the nature of it might change. In which case, what he might mean is my whole halachic quandary, which I think I might have annoyed Rabbi Yochanan about and got him to hate me, even though Rabbi Eliezer says that's not the case, was never actually a question. It was only a question because she was alive and I was going to accompany her. But if she's going to arrive anyway, and you know, she's no longer alive, she's no longer endangered, by the way, of course, then there's no halachic justification for me to leave Eretz Yisrael, and I should have stayed here. Alternatively, it's Pinchas's answer, which is that had I known that she didn't have much longer to live, I would have stayed. Why? Well, you can understand a few different ideas.
I'm not necessarily reading it as had I known she was going to pass away soon, I would have stayed. But had I known she would die on the journey, it was more what I was thinking.
So that's not clear. It could be, and obviously, you know, we still have Chinese whispers with people over WhatsApp today, all the more so back then. It could be that even the original message was garbled. And that she'd passed away and was being buried in... She'd passed away in Babel before she'd left, and she was going to leave for Eretz Yisrael. That's definitely a possibility. It could be that she'd passed away on the way. But I think what that would mean, if he's saying, if I'd have known I wouldn't have left Babel, it could mean as follows. Had I known I would never see her again, had I known I couldn't go back and visit, had I known this would be the way, I wouldn't have left her. Alternatively, and it's not a massive difference, it could also mean... If I'd known that the really difficult situation I was having wouldn't actually have lasted that long, I'd have sweated it out a little bit longer and not have, you know, been not have stayed with it. Yeah, Ben.
Is it more not like making an assertion, more like wondering? Like we spent a lot of time last year and this year looking at like the raw emotional reactions after death. So it's like this is like a sense of regret. Immediately after finding out that his mother has passed away, so how much implication could you look at this as like a rational statement versus this is just like what he's saying out of his grievance?
Meaning, is
like,
it just a?
Like my mother's
he's
like,
in
oh my god, like I should have been with her. Like, of course.
I don't think at any point last year some statements aren't deeply valid, even if they're said in the heat of the moment.
So I guess what would the implications of
I think if anything, it captures maybe his truest sense being said in the heat of the moment. Benkach u benkach, whether the if I had known I wouldn't have left refers to leaving Israel or refers to leaving Babel, everyone agrees it's a deeply sad story. Okay, we're going to come back to the story pretty soon. I've got to show you just one more source about breaking off relations with parents. The Gemara goes on to say as follows. Yeah, Nina.
Just to make sure, it's not written until he left Israel. Right?
Sorry?
It's not written until he left Israel.
He didn't.
You mean as to where he is at the point where he gets the message?
Yeah.
Not clear. He might have left. He may have left Israel at that point. Maybe it even implies it is that one, because, you know, had I known, I wouldn't have left. I'm not sure. It could equally be that he's left Israel.
Yeah.
Right now, maybe he's upset that he's abandoned the halakha of staying in Israel. Yeah, that's definitely possible. We said last time that one of the mitzvot of morat, of the aim of revering one's parents, is to stand for them. Right? Kibud av ve'em is Siman Resh Mem and Siman Resh Mem Aleph in Yoredeh. Siman Resh Mem Bet is Kibbutz, the person honoring their teacher. Has many of the similar ideas, right? Similarly, you stand for your teacher when they come in, right? That was Rav Liebtag's joke that's how seven girls get their exercise. They just stand up and sit down during the classes throughout the day. Just sharing that for those of you who appreciate his humour. And apologies for those of you who don't. Everybody see the potential conflict between those two halachot, standing for your parents and standing for your teacher? What's a potential conflict?
They walk in at the same time.
Better than that, says the Gemara, Daf Lamed Gimel, I haven't put it on. Beno v'hu rabo mahu. What, where, the child is the teacher. Who stands for who? Does the child stand for the parent, because the parent is their father, kibud em, yirat ta'av? Or does the father stand for the child, given that the child is the teacher? Sorry?
Standing for a teacher like a Durabanan is standing for your parents.
Isn't it probably based Durarita?
It is.
Yeah.
What's the Durarita
for? For honoring your teacher?
Yeah,
I mean, I haven't got to the subyot yet, but I can think of multiple ones about, you know, Lotasur mi minamu smolam, or multiple ideas which, you know, give a strong sense of kibud harav. I think Marco basically got the answer. What's the answer? Safek d'oraita l'chumra, right? You can do both, right? Each one can stand for the other one. Both show respect. You know what, Nina? The Maharam, Mirottenberg, Rabbi Meir, the greatest halachic authority in Germany in the 12th century, felt exactly like you, and he came up with the following solution. Okay? Are you all ready for this? And I've shown this to Rabbanei Yeshivat HaRetzion, who had not come across it before, and they almost fell off their chair as I showed it to them, and had a big discussion amongst themselves over it, and it is strange. Okay, this is the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, who is the Rosh to the Maharam of Rottenburg. He is his disciple, right? Famous story of the Maharam being captured and ransomed, and, you know, putting huge expense on the Jewish community, and told his students to get out of Germany rather than, you know, sort of stay there as a potential abuse of the anti-Semites around them. So the Rosh left for Spain, and very important moment in halachic history. Anyway, because of that, the Rosh knows a lot about the Maharam of Rottenberg. Source number 3, Ibailuhu benobuhu rabo mahu. A child who is also his father's teacher, what's the din? La'amod mipnei aviv. Should he stand up in front of his father, or vice versa? V'lo yifshita. And the Gemara doesn't give a clear answer. Ibailuhu benobuhu rabo mahu la'amod aviv mipanav. Gamzeh lo yifshita. Right? Other way around. Then answer, the sake of the Doraitahu, it's a biblical level down. The Amdu Zemik Nezem, they should both stand up. Amru Alav, it was told, Al Rabbeinu Meir mi Rottenburg, Shemiyom Sha'ala L'Gdula, from the day that he assumed his position of head of the community, Premier Posek of Germany, Lo Hikbil Pnei Aviv, he never saw his father again, V'lo Ratza Sh'ya Aviv Yavo Alav, and didn't want his father to come to him. There you go, Nina. That's another way of getting out of the suffix, right? Benobuhu rabo mahu hu abuhu. Answer. Never see each other again, and then you don't need to get into the question of halachic now.
What happened when, like, Rav Moshe got up to speak? Did Rav Lichtenstein stand up? Did Rav Aram stand up?
Yeah, I think so.
It's not rabo, though. Mm.
It's not.
It's benobuhu, but it's not
rabo.
Yeah. But it's like... He's a great rabbi, but he's not Rav Aram's teacher.
No, it's only your Rebbe Mufak that you have to stand for.
Yeah.
then how would a son become a dad teacher if
Many of us, certainly. You know, many people in this generation who are profoundly more learned than that of a previous generation. Isn't this the most intense, the most tragic source?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
No.
Does it?
Yeah, because the Torah always tries to keep the respect of everyone. So, like, it's more respectful to not run into the issue.
How is it more respectful to not see each other?
But at what cost? At what cost, you guys?
Whose choice was it, is my question.
It sounds like Rabbi Meir, no? Sounds mutual. The Lorat Sashi Aviv Avolav? That sounds like he's coming.
It sounds mutual, though. Yeah, it's mutual.
Okay.
What if it's the parents or the dad wish to learn from his child?
Yeah, I mean, that's
what his dad to come to him.
That's a good question. Now look, I don't have any solutions for this story. To make it even stranger, the Ramah he puts a certain spin on it, only in a case where people don't know that the father is the father of the son. If im lo dashi bi'iro, so until like bizbuz hatorah, we're not going to go into the topic. I can't not read it as also, you know, mi yodeh, who knows what it was like to live in Germany 900 years ago and to and you know what the relations were that caused that. I don't know. What I think is worth having a moment's thought about. And certainly no need to share anything that people aren't comfortable with. But I think to put yourself into Rav Asi's shoes for a moment, even if not into the Maharam's shoes, and ask yourself the question of what are the issues that most frequently come between me and my parents? What are the things that ask of me, or even if it's not, you know, phrased as sort of like a specific demand, what are the sorts of things that they direct at me in our relationship that frustrate me, that, you know, make me exasperated, that in theory, you know, would put you in a position where if they were to get more extreme would leave you understanding Rav Asi wanting to leave them? That's question number one. And question number two is to really plug back the machloket between the Rambam and the Ravid, which is obviously based on this Gemara, back into the story. And picture yourself as either the Rambam or the Ravid. And ask yourself, from reading the story, does Rav Asi seem justified, despite the tragic conclusion? And is it something that you can learn from? So those two questions, maybe, if this doesn't seem too strange, maybe let's do them bechavruta. Turn to somebody next to you. No, nobody needs to open up about things that they don't want to do, but it might also be quite fruitful what you do feel comfortable sharing, and plug the Rambam and the Ravid back in. Let's do that for a couple of minutes before coming back. We said that the final line of Rav Asi, Amar Iyadi lo nafki, if I'd known I wouldn't have left, could be interpreted in one of two ways. Either he wouldn't have left Israel, or he wouldn't have left Babel. I want to suggest a third reading. It's not my reading, it's a reading appears in two wonderful articles that I've spent time poring over this week. One by somebody associated with Gush, with Herzog, Rabbi Dr. Yonatan Feintuch, who has got a series online. Another one with our very own Professor Jeffrey Rubenstein, who I've been talking about it with this week. Before we get to this third interpretation of what it might mean had I known, I want to point out that parts 1 and 2, if you look back at your English translation, note you can draw a very clear parallel between them. Everybody see it? In both cases, there are two parties, two sides. The one side asks questions, and the other side answers the questions. In both parts, there are three questions. And look at the very fascinating parallel between both parts. Part 1, question 1, and part 2, question 1, are both responded to in exactly the same way. Rav Asi's mother asks for jewels, Rav Asi gets her jewels. Rav Asi asks Rabbi Yochanan a question, and he gets a definite answer. Simple question, straightforward answer. Question 2 in both parts is also responded to in a similar way, this time ambiguously. Says Ravasi's mother, I want a husband. Ravasi says, I'll look into it for you. Says Ravasi to Rabbi Yochanan, can I leave Eretz Yisrael to go and greet my mother? Says Rabbi Yochanan, I'm not sure. I don't know. Once again, ambiguous. But what's really interesting is how, when it comes to answering the third question, now they part ways. When Ravasi's mother had said, I not only do I want a husband, but I want a husband like you, Shavak, Ravasi fled. But when Rabbi Yochanan is asked by Ravasi, Nu, tell me again, Rabbi Yochanan draws him closer and he blesses him. Which is to say that there is something, we're only halfway, we're nearly there, it's not going to take long, but we're just halfway to getting there. The had I known the iyadi of Ravasi's statement must refer not only to part one about his mother and his relationship with his mother, but to some new knowledge which comes from his interaction with Rabbi Yochanan. Had I understood what I've learned from my interaction with Rabbi Yochanan, we'll get to what that is in a moment, had I understood that, I never would have left Bado. What is it that he learns? Well, this has to be clarified in part three from Rabbi Eliezer. He turns to Rabbi Eliezer and says, I just don't know what he wants, what he means. Rabbi Eliezer says, if he blessed you, he definitely meant you should go in peace. And what Ravasi learns from this is as follows. Quickly pass this round. This is the way in which Refinter finishes off. What is Ravasi's new insight? After his discussion with Rabbi Yochanan, Ravasi is afraid that his teacher is angry with him. He therefore interprets Rabbi Yochanan's response in a negative manner. As if he had said, if in any event you will decide the matter on your own, why do you bother me with your questions? But Rabbi Eliezer, with full confidence, interprets the response of Rabbi Yochanan positively. This sharp transition and the unequivocal manner in which Rabbi Eliezer interprets Rabbi Yochanan's response causes Ravasi to reflect upon the manner in which he returns his the responses and desires of others. In other words, just as he misread Rabbi Yochanan's response to his own question, perhaps he has misread the responses of other people or the questions of other people in the past. Ravasi understands that a considerable part of the way he reads his reality, as it is in the heart, reads his communication with other people, stems from his internal anxiety. He's clearly, even though he's a Rav, he's clearly got some immaturity, some lack of self-confidence. And not necessarily from the reality as it is in the heart of the person standing before him. This insight, which he learns from the difference between the way he understood Rabbi Yochanan and the manner in which Rabbi Elazar understood him, leads him to rethink. Did he correctly interpret the requests and wishes of his mother? Perhaps his mother's third request, which, in accordance with his pattern of interpretation, he interpreted as a psychologically abnormal request, is in fact something else. Perhaps his mother merely wished to say that she prefers his closeness and love as a son and not as a partner. But for some reason, it was difficult for her to say this in a straightforward manner. So she hinted to it by saying that she wants someone like you. Is it possible that all she had asked for was more warm closeness from her son? And Ravasi, learning from Rabbi Eliezer about his own interaction with Rabbi Yochanan, that frequently the way in which he's understanding somebody may be influenced by what's going on in himself, now says, if I'd known this, and I'd been able to decode what my mother actually meant, I never would have left. If I'd been able to understand that what she was really asking for was not actually a husband like me, but rather she was giving voice to the desire for more attention and affection from me, then I would never have needed to have left.
Yeah, but that kills the Rambam's reading of it.
Beseder. Sorry. I'm comfortable with that. This is Professor Rubenstein in correspondence with me. A third way of understanding, perhaps I'm reading to you myself now, perhaps the first words, had I known, are also ambiguous and do not refer to the knowledge of his mother's death, but to knowledge and the sense of understanding of his mother's feelings towards him. The mother's death, after a futile quest to see her beloved son, again, may have led Rav Asi to reevaluate his attitude towards her. Could he mean, had I known how profoundly she actually loved me, as evidenced by her efforts to reunite with me, I never would have left my home. Her demand for a husband as handsome as I, though irritating, perhaps was fundamentally an expression of devotion to me, and I should have been more tolerant. And so, if you take this reading, and I think it's actually a very compelling reading, it's still a very sad story, obviously. But rather than this cycle of stories sort of basically ending with showing you how impossible it sometimes is to serve your parents, it actually ends on a much more hopeful request. And it says that above and beyond just fulfilling the basic, you know, bring me a cup of tea type requests from your parents, what's demanded of us and what's asked of us, even when it's very difficult, is to try and reflect how can we actually see beyond the actual words that our parents are saying and see what it is that they actually want from us. And perhaps if we're able to do that, the response and the request might actually be much easier. And it points in this way to some sort of tikkun which Rav Asi could have done. And just to finish and to conclude the whole series, the piece with which we started is known as Shlosha Shutfin, right? Shlosha Shutfin ba'adam. There are three partners in the creation of a person: the father, the mother, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is source number 5. Kaved et avicha ve'et imecha, honor your mother and your father. Kaved et Hashem mihoncha, honor Hashem. Ish aviv ve'imo va'aviv tirah, a person should fear their mother and their father. V'ne'emar et Hashem elokecha tirah, a person should fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? All of these parallels, all of these ideas. We explained it in multiple ways, right? So great is the mitzvah of kibud av va'em, it's comparable to honouring Hashem, so too in its difficulty. But perhaps also we can finish off by suggesting a third way. And what is that third way? That just as exactly what it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us is sometimes not always the simplest of tasks. Yeah, there are mitzvot which we're supposed to do. You know, those are straightforward in terms of what Hashem is asking from us. But perhaps there are moments where, and this is what we need to ask for in our tefillot and in our moments of self-reflection, there's just as much that we need to really ask ourselves is, I think I'm doing what I should be doing, but perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actually telling me there's something else that He wants of me and wants of my direction. And just as that is the case with Hashem, so too it is the case with our parents. And this is life. This is the nature of what it is to live. It's not easy, it's not difficult, and in certain situations there are no simple and clear solutions. But what it means to be a human, certainly what it means to be a Ben Torah, but what it means to be a person who just lives in a serious sense, is to try to carry on doing our very best, even when we are forced to ask ourselves, what is it that we can be doing. I just want to finish off with just one final lovely nuanced thing, proving, I think, Rav Feinberg's point. Remember I asked all of you, what was Rav Asi's first question to Rabbi Yochanan? Is he allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael? And you remember all of you said, he means he wants to run away from his mother? You all misjudged him. All of you negatively judged Rav Asi. You thought he wants to flee again, but he wanted to go and accompany his mother. Do you see how clever it is? Precisely the point of the story, that Rav Asi needs to think more carefully before he judges others, in this case his mother, we learn by how we read Rav Asi, right? Just as we misjudged Rav Asi, so too Rav Asi had misjudged his mother. By the end of the story, we too have learned that Rav Asi, in fact, had something else altogether. Yisha koach, everybody. It's been such a pleasure learning this series. Thank you.